Welcome to the April edition of our Pensions Podcast. This podcast series sees us bringing you the most recent pension law developments in a practical way. This month's podcast will be brought to you by me, Julia Ward, the Senior Knowledge Development Lawyer in the Pensions team, and Josh Spicer, who is the trainee in our team.
Thanks, Julia. I've seen that pension dashboards are once again playing a prominent role in the pensions press. Am I right in thinking that that's due to the DWP publishing updated guidance regarding the connection deadlines?
Yes, Josh, that is correct. In its new guidance, the DWP emphasises that all schemes must connect to the pensions dashboard ecosystem by the 31st of October 2026 at the latest. The guidance also sets out a best practice stage timetable for schemes based on the number of relevant members at the reference date. This is the scheme year end date between the 1st of April 2023 and the 31st of March 2024. For the largest schemes, this date is the 30th of April 2025, with the smallest schemes recommended to join by the 30th of September 2026.
So does this mean that best practice timetable is not mandatory?
Correct, it's not mandatory. However, the DWP has noted that meeting the dates in the stage timetable will provide the Pensions Dashboard Programme with adequate time to assist and coordinate activities to support the connection of schemes in advance of the 31st of October 2026. The guidance also emphasises that connecting to the dashboard ecosystem by these relevant dates will give schemes sufficient testing time to enhance the member experience by the legal deadline. It will also showcase good governance and robust risk management on the part of the scheme.
Are there any other points to note from the guidance?
It's probably worth just highlighting that the guidance confirms two ways that schemes can connect to the dashboard, either through an in-house technical solution or direct connection, or through buying services from an integrated service provider.
Thanks, Julia. For our next topic, we'll briefly mention the regulations which came into force on the 6th of April 2024 and made important changes to the funding regime for defined benefit pension schemes. The regulations codify under statute the requirement for defined benefit pension schemes to have a funding and investment strategy, as well as the requirement to prepare a statement of strategy that sets out the funding and investment strategy. There are also changes made to provide that calculation of technical provisions should align with the funding and investment strategy.
When do schemes need to put in place a statement of strategy and this funding and investment strategy?
So these need to be produced within the period of 15 months, beginning on the effective date of the first actuarial valuation for the scheme after these regulations come into force.
Presumably, in the interim, the existing regime just continues to apply.
Yeah, that's right. Transitional regulations provide that until a scheme is required to put in place a funding investment strategy, the current provisions on the statutory funding objective continue to apply. So the transitional provisions also provide that Section 224 of the Pensions Act 2004, which relate to obtaining actuarial valuations, will continue to apply without amendment until the scheme obtains an actuarial valuation with an effective date on or after the 22nd of September 2024. But Julia, I understand that there have been yet more developments on the lifetime allowance abolition.
Yes, that's correct, Josh. It was only last month that we discussed that the Finance Act 2024 had received royal assent, and the first set of regulations, the Pensions Abolition of Lifetime Allowance Charges, etc. Regulations 2024, had been published amending that legislation. And you might recall these regulations were effective from the 6th of April 2024. However, HMRC have now confirmed that there will be a second set of amending regulations to deal with some further minor technical changes. And these are required to ensure that the legislation works as was intended.
So if these are just to tidy up some minor points, what impact will they have on schemes?
Well, some of the changes that are required actually mean that HMRC have recommended members should wait until the second set of regulations are in place before taking or transferring certain benefits.
And which members will this impact?
So this will particularly impact members with enhanced protection who want to transfer their pension to a new provider and carry over the benefit of that protection. This is because amending legislation will be needed to permit this, and so such members may wish to delay transferring to a new provider until this has been done. In addition, it will also impact members who have certain protections that entitle them to take a tax-free lump sum in excess of £375,000. these members may want to limit the amount of the pension commencement lump sum they take, or again, delay taking it until the amending regulations are in place, so that they can take their full entitlement. The payment of lump sum death benefits, where the payment is to be made from funds that crystallised before the 6th of April 2024, should also consider pausing these. The intention is that the lump sum death benefits from such fund would be tax-free because they would have already been tested against the previous lifetime allowance. However, the legislation as it currently is drafted limits the tax-free amount of the death benefit that could be paid by the amount of the available lump sum and death benefit allowance. Any amount that exceeds this would, at the moment, be subject to a member's marginal rate of income tax. And finally, members who wish to take a pension commencement lump sum under scheme-specific lump sum protection may also wish to hold off until the new regulations are in place. This is because the formula in the legislation applying to this currently double counts certain benefits, and so members may wish for this to be sorted beforehand. For our next topic, I hear that the regulator has been exercising its moral hazard powers recently.
Yes, in the case of Newborough Engineering Co Limited, pension and assurance scheme, the regulator used its anti-avoidance functions against group companies after the sponsoring employer of the scheme transferred assets with a high value to other group companies.
Would you mind just briefly setting out the facts for us?
Yeah, of course. At the last triennial valuation on the 31st of March 2014, the scheme had a funding deficit of 2.32 million and a Section 75 deficit of 8.84 million. The sponsoring employer's business and assets were transferred to other group companies from 2005. Assets included working capital support, intercompany loans, and a dividend worth 5.67 million funded from a sale of property. The group companies did not give proper mitigation to the sponsoring employer or to the scheme. And the sponsoring employer then entered administration in October 2018, and the scheme ultimately transferred to the PPF. And then the regulator issued warning notices seeking financial support directions against six group companies. And ultimately, an agreement was reached between the group companies and the regulator, which was worth 3.52 million.
Does this therefore show that the regulator is willing to reach settlements with parties in these situations?
The regulator has said that it will consider reasonable settlement offers in order to save costs and resources of all the involved parties. In this case, although an amount equal to the Section 75 debt was not received, the amount that was agreed upon represented all of the target's cash assets and about 80% of their available assets.
Thanks, Josh. And for our final topic, we will consider the recent Ombudsman case of Mr. E, which seems to continue a recent theme by the Ombudsman of providing significant redress for members who have been subject to maladministration. In this case, the claimant was a member of the Royal Mail Pension Plan. He completed his retirement forms to indicate he wished to take an early retirement pension without a pension commencement lump sum. However, he also signed a declaration on the form stating that he would be taking a pension commencement lump sum.
So it sounds like the claimant's requests were therefore mutually exclusive as to whether he wanted to be given a pension commencement lump sum.
Yes, that was exactly the point. The scheme administrator paid the claimant a pension reduced for early retirement and with no pension commencement lump sum. However, the claimant responded that he had incorrectly chosen this option and asked for a new form so that he could select the correct option with a pension commencement lump sum. The scheme administrator indicated that the claimant would have to provide evidence to the Cabinet Office of exceptional circumstances that would warrant him allowing to be changed the option he had selected in the first place. The Cabinet Office did not allow him to change his pension from a full pension with a pension commencement lump sum. So the member complained to the Ombudsman, and the Ombudsman held that the option chosen by the claimant on the form and the declaration he signed were clearly mutually exclusive. As a result, it should have been clear to the scheme administrators that the claimant was unclear as to which option he wished to select. In addition, on discovering the error, the claimant immediately contacted the scheme administrators. There was therefore an opportunity to correct the claimant's pension payments within 12 months of the benefit crystallisation event, allowing the sums to be treated as an authorised payment. On that basis, the Ombudsman directed that the scheme administrator should calculate the amount the claimant would have received today if the claimant had been paid a pension commencement lump sum with a reduced pension. The scheme administrator was directed to pay the claimant a lump sum equal to the difference between this amount and the sums actually paid to the claimant to date. In addition, in light of the administrator's failure to address the issue at an earlier stage, the scheme administrator should pay the claimant a sum equal to any additional tax liability on the claimant as a result of the payment of the lump sum.
Thanks for that, Julia. And that's it for this podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. We discussed these topics in more detail in our April snapshot at www.pensionshub.com. And of course, our Stevenson Harwood Pensions team is always on hand to assist you. You can listen to this podcast and subscribe to the series on iTunes or Spotify or on our Pensions Hub. And please join us again in May for the next installment. Thank you.